Drop it.
What?
Put the animal down.
Why?
We're gonna kill it.
What? You monsters! Why would you want to kill a poor defenseless little kitten?
This ain't no kitten kid.
That's a jumbo-sized sewer rat.
HPPodcraft.com.
Old Masson, the caretaker of one of Salem's oldest and most neglected cemeteries, had a feud with the rats. Generations ago, they had come up from the wharves and settled in the graveyard, a colony of abnormally large rats, and when Masson had taken charge after the inexplicable disappearance of the former caretaker, he decided that they must go. At first, he set traps for them and put poisoned food by their burrows, and later he tried to shoot them. But it did no good. The rats stayed, multiplying and overrunning the graveyard with their ravenous hordes.
Rats! Thousands of them! Millions of them! All in this story, The Graveyard Rats by Henry Kuttner.
Yes. And we're going to be talking about it here on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast. I am Christopher John Lackey.
And I am Chad Lee Pfeiffer. We're here at HPPodcraft.com and Patreon to confront the new year and new fears.
New fears.
A concept for this month that falls apart immediately when discussing this story, because fear of rats is a pretty old fear when you get right down to it.
It's even old for our show. We've already had rat stories.
Exactly. And not even that long ago. It's such an old fear that some folks actually think it's instinctual. Like, you know, fear of snakes or spiders. You're kind of born with it because it's passed down through evolution from our caveman ancestors.
Mm.
You know, you don't need to have a rat cut you off in traffic or anything to know. They could be aggressive and dangerous.
True.
And some scientists, they postulate that people, they just know this in their bones. A few studies have been proposed to try and test this theory, but it's kind of tough to construct an experiment like that. It's definitely tough to get test subjects because babies just don't seem willing to sign up to be dropped in a box with some rats.
Yeah.
Even if they're offered $20 or whatever. So, I mean, I don't know. I guess what these babies are really afraid of is knowledge.
Yeah, babies are the worst about that stuff.
I'm very disappointed in the babies of today. But speaking of sweet babies, who's that reader we had at the top?
Why, that was the world-famous Anthony Tedesco, voiceover actor extraordinaire.
Yes, that's right. You know, in the UK, you have Tesco.
We do.
Here in the States, we have Tedesco. You know the old slogan, the difference is in the D. Take that as you will. Thank you, Anthony. Hey, we are now on Instagram.
It's about goddamn time we did that.
If that's a thing you use, go follow us at HP Podcraft. Chris, did you recognize that little bit of audio I built into our show tag at the top of the show?
I did. That was from the classic film Adventures in Babysitting.
Yes. Fear of rats might not be a new fear, but there are always new things to fear about rats, I think.
Sure.
Of course, we did talk about their teeth, being able to gnaw through anything, and their goggling, weird, creepy eyes when we covered... That was Three Skeleton Key. It was just a short while ago.
Yeah.
This recommendation actually came from a comment on Three Skeleton Key by William Reeder, who wrote, if you want another siege slash rat tale, I recommend Henry Kuttner's first short story, The Graveyard Rats.
Mm-hmm.
And then William actually followed up with a comment on our recent Nightwire episode. And he wrote, Kuttner was an incredibly prolific author of pulp tales. Some weird, but he published in Thrilling Wonder, Mystery, Marvel Science, Strange, and even a few spicy tales.
Mm-hmm.
But Graveyard Rats was always a bit of an albatross in that it was his almost first published tale and almost always pointed out as his best.
Mm.
Pity the poor artist who leads with his best loved work and never strikes the public interest to the same level again.
Yeah.
And that is a drag, especially, you know, since I read somewhere he was kind of embarrassed by this story later in life.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't think he should be.
I like it, yeah.
This is something that should be encouraging for people. I know a lot of artists and writers and actors and musicians who feel like, oh man, you know, I'm getting older. And it's just too late for me. You know, I'm 55 or whatever, and I haven't even published a story yet. But I say, you're in a lucky position when your greatest achievements are still ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sucks to be climbing the mountain, and it feels like you'll never make it, and it never ends. But you got to remember that when you crest, it's all downhill from there, and that's not always a good thing.
Yep.
Or at the very least, it's just a flat walk for a while, which is... You know, me using a bad metaphor just to say that there's lots of people who were successful right out of the gate, but I don't know if you should envy them.
Yeah.
Because in most cases, they're unable to match that success again in their life.
Right.
And they've got a lot of life in front of them that's disappointing in comparison to the accomplishments of their youth. There's this enormous amount of pressure to know what you're doing and to be established when you're in your early 20s.
Sure.
And you beat yourself up about it. You know, I remember having your 25th birthday party at the bowling alley, and you kind of looked like, well, it's all over now. You know, I'm 25 and I wasn't on the cover of a premiere yet. So
yeah,
I guess I'm a loser. But
I am a loser.
Don't beat yourself up about it. You're fine. Try to enjoy what you're doing and just keep working at it.
You can go out there, look for older actors. I remember Bob Hoskins. I don't think he got his first role until he was in his 50s, if I remember correctly. So there's lots of people out there that find success and fame later in life.
It's fun to read biographies and see what people did, especially if you admire them. But don't compare yourself to other people. Everybody's got their own rhythm, their own beat, their own schedule.
Of course.
Okay, graduation speech over. Let's talk about Henry Kuttner. What's he all about?
Henry Kuttner was born in Los Angeles in 1915. This story, as you said, The Graveyard Rats, was his first published work in 1936 in Weird Tales. He is connected to the Lovecraft Circle via E. Hoffman Price and Clark Ashton Smith.
Yeah, he's a pretty influential guy. A lot of folks think because he wrote under so many pseudonyms that that's the reason he didn't become more famous.
Hmm.
Kuttner's friend Richard Matheson dedicated his novel from 1954, I Am Legend, to Kuttner, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
With thanks for his help and encouragement. Ray Bradbury has said that Kuttner actually wrote the last 300 words of Bradbury's first horror story, The Candle, which was in Weird Tales in 1942. Mm. And Bradbury has referred to Kuttner as a neglected master and a pomegranate writer, popping with seeds full of ideas.
Oh, that's nice.
He was friends with Lovecraft as well as E. Hoffman Price and Clark Ashton Smith. Yeah. I don't know how close that relationship was.
As far as I understood it, he actually met in person E. Hoffman Price and Clark Ashton Smith.
Oh, I see.
But he did communicate with Lovecraft via letters and things like
that.
Yeah,
he was in the whole circle. And he contributed some stories to the Cthulhu Mythos genre.
Right.
Among these were The Secret of Krelitz, mm-hmm. The Eater of Souls, The Salem Horror, The Invaders, and The Hunt.
Kuttner was also married to C.L. Moore. And if you recall, she was in on The Challenge from Beyond.
Right.
He and Moore worked together on numerous stories.
Yeah, L. Sprague de Camp, he knew both of those guys really well. And he said their collaboration was so seamless that after a story was completed, neither of them could really say who had written what.
Yeah.
According to him, it was typical for one of them to break off a story in mid-paragraph, maybe even mid-sentence, and leave the page of the manuscript on the typewriter, and then the other one would just sit down and pick up where the other one left off.
Wow.
And they would alternate in this manner as many times as necessary until the story was finished, which is really cool.
Also in the 1940s, Kuttner wrote for the Green Lantern comic book. His most popular solo works were the Gallagher stories about a drunk inventor who made crazy cool stuff, but then would not remember how he actually made the things when he got sober. So this inventor was also assisted by an egomaniacal robot. These stories are collected in a book called Robots Have No Tails, but he published these stories under the name Paget.
Right, so he used a pseudonym once again. Yeah, I've never heard of this concept, but it's already my favorite. I love it without having read any of it, this idea that...
That sounds awesome.
It sounds great.
I gotta get these books.
The only thing I ever invented when I was drunk were excuses to drink more. Speaking of drunken behavior, I kind of lost the plot a second ago with that half-assed pep talk. I was trying to say that we've already established some things to fear from rats, but there are also some new fears I'd like to engender in our listeners before we get into the story.
Huh.
Something that we didn't discuss on Three Skeleton Key, rats carry disease.
Yes.
Which I think is primarily what to be afraid of them for.
Right.
Rat bites and scratches may result in disease such as lymphocytic chorioamnionitis, which is a viral infectious disease, salmonellosis, or even rat bite fever, which I've never heard of before. Have you heard of that?
Isn't it a Ted Nugent song?
No, that's cat scratch fever.
Oh,
it sounds like it would be a Ted Nugent song.
Yeah.
Rat bite fever is a systemic illness classically characterized by fever, shivering, sweats, joint pains.
Oh, God.
If left untreated, it carries a mortality rate of 10%. It's pretty high as far as mortality rates go.
Well, untreated.
Right.
Come on, 10% untreated. That's not bad.
Okay, go get bitten by some rats and we'll see how you feel about that. Those odds. Rat urine is also known to spread leptospirosis, which may lead to liver and kidney damage. And rats have been known to transmit hantavirus. Hantavirus is incredibly dangerous and may result in difficulty breathing. It can even become fatal if not treated. Don't know the percentages there. But it's transmitted to humans when they inhale airborne particles from rodent droppings, urine, or carcasses.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I guess the moral of the story is don't huff rats. Don't huff rat corpses. I know it sounds cool, but just say no.
Bull.
enough of that business. Let's get into the story.
So the story starts off with this gravedigger, Masson, who works in a cemetery in Salem.
I feel like the first sentence has a little bit of a joke built into it that's easy to miss. It says, old Masson, the caretaker of one of Salem's oldest and most neglected cemeteries. So it seems like he's just describing the cemetery, but he's actually telling you the kind of job that he's doing.
All right.
It doesn't look good on a caretaker's resume to say, my cemetery was voted most neglected in Salem. Like, that is the definition of not doing your job as a caretaker.
Yeah, Masson seems to be really bad at his job, as we find out in the story. So this cemetery has a rat problem. He's worked for years trying to solve it, but has only really kept it somewhat contained.
It also says that Masson took this job after the last caretaker's inexplicable disappearance.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure has nothing to do with these rats.
He was having an affair with a woman. Her husband found out he got out of town. That was all.
Yeah.
It's in the subtext.
Reading between the lines.
These rats are big, like up to 15 inches, and that's not including the tail.
They're large even for the Mus decumanus, which I think are just common sewer rats, or what we think of as, you know, street rats, which can get up to 15 inches long, like a foot long. I have never seen that other than in movies or whatever. But
no, dude, I saw a big rat. I was with Andrew Lehman, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. We were going to see a play in downtown LA, and this huge rat just walked right in front of us, like it owned the street.
Oh, man.
We just stopped where we were walking, just stopped, watch it go in there. And I was like, that is the biggest rat I have ever seen. And I swear, its body was a foot long.
Oh, my God. Well, these rats in the Salem graveyard are bigger than even that. It says they're the size of cats, which is why I thought of Adventures in Babysitting, because that's one of my favorite scenes from there.
When digging graves, Masson found tunnels that these rats had dug, and they were big enough for a man to crawl through on his hands and knees. It says, the ships that had come generations ago from distant ports to the rotting Salem wharves had brought strange cargoes. So, are these descendants of the seafaring Dutch rats?
They must be.
Masson wondered sometimes at the extraordinary size of these burrows. He recalled certain vaguely disturbing legends he had heard since coming to ancient, witch-haunted Salem. Tales of a moribund, inhuman life that was said to exist in forgotten burrows in the earth. The old days, when Cotton Mather had hunted down the evil cults that worshipped Hecate, and the dark Magna Mater and frightful orgies had passed. But dark-gabled houses still leaned perilously towards each other over narrow cobbled streets, and blasphemous secrets and mysteries were said to be hidden in subterranean cellars and caverns, where forgotten pagan rites were still celebrated in defiance of law and sanity. Wagging their gray heads wisely, the elders declared there were worse things than rats and maggots crawling in the unhallowed earth of the ancient Salem cemeteries.
Which haunted Salem seems like a direct crib from Lovecraft.
Well, you know, actually everybody in Salem, they use that all the time.
Is that so?
Oh, yeah, it's on their letterheads.
Welcome to Witch Hunt. Actually, I think they probably do. That's booming industry in Salem.
Oh, yeah.
Although Danvers is actually where the stuff went down, as far as I know.
Oh, of course, but nobody knows that.
You know, I also don't like this paragraph because it casts Cotton Mather as a good guy, right? Hunting down evil cults instead of the superstitious jerk-off he was who had women executed for nothing. And I don't want to hear any of this, oh, he was a man of his time stuff, because there were plenty of contemporaries of Cotton Mather who thought he and his dad, Increase, were idiots.
Right.
Directly responsible for stirring up the stupid ideas that caused the Salem hysteria.
Right.
But nevertheless, this is the world, I assume, where all that stuff was real.
Yeah.
They actually were witches. And people, it says, from what we just heard, are still doing pagan stuff in their basements. But at least in this world, we do get some frightful orgies.
Yeah.
Which, I, you know, that's kind of hard for me to imagine what that is. Is it like a regular orgy, but they worked in some jump scares? Like, what is it that goes down in a frightful orgy?
Not to ruin your joke, but I always pictured it as violence going on in these orgies.
Oh, that is frightful.
Where some people are into it, but some people aren't into it.
Well, I like it better if someone just pops out in a hockey mask while the dude's getting it on with two ladies. Oh, God!
Masson has heard from the older generation that there were these old abandoned houses where not only rats thrived, but ghoulish beings and tunnels underneath these houses. Mm. The myth of the Pied Piper might have had darker origins.
You ever get to run the chainsaw at the end of an orgy? It's amazing. Anyway, it's bodies had been stolen from graves for nocturnal subterranean feasts. The old folks say. So I guess they're basically talking about ghouls when they're...
Yeah.
I mean, it does say ghoulish beings, so that's pretty much what that is.
Right.
And apparently they use these rats to communicate with or get information from the upper world, because they live deep underground. Anyway, that's the rumor.
Right.
This whole bit about the blasphemous horror or the darker origins and the legend of the Pied Piper, I didn't really buy because, as I remember that, it's a pretty dark story.
Yeah.
Right? Because he shows up in Hamelin in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a rat problem. He says, give me some dough and I'll solve this. And they say, okay. So he uses his magic flute and he leads all the rats to the Weser River where they drown.
That's right.
All cool. But then the mayor doesn't pay up. So the Pied Piper waits until all the grown-ups are in church. And then he plays his magic flute for the 100-plus kids who live in the village. They get hypnotized by it and they follow him off to a cave or a mountaintop, depends on the version you hear.
Right.
And they are never heard from again.
Yep.
That's his punishment to the mayor. So it's a story about mass child abduction.
Yeah.
And I even think that the rat aspect of it was added later. The original versions of the story were strictly about a dude abducting a bunch of kids in the early 1300s version.
Oh.
And so they just added the rat part in the 1500s for whatever reason.
Oh.
I mean, I don't understand how that gets darker, you know?
Well, maybe that he takes them off to eat them.
Maybe that would be, I guess there's always a way to make something darker, right? You could actually describe what happens, but.
Masson, he never paid much attention to these stories, which is, of course, mistake number one.
Mm.
He took the rats seriously, however, as they are vicious little pests, and he saw firsthand that the graves that were dug had holes in buried coffins where the rats ate up on the dead.
Masson also tries to hide the rat infestation from the public. He doesn't want them to know about it, because if they do know about it, then they're going to come to investigate.
Yes.
It says, while some of the gnawed empty coffins could be attributed to the activities of the rats, Masson might find it difficult to explain the mutilated bodies that lay in some of the coffins.
Mm-hmm. Because gold fillings are some of the purest gold. Also, medical students and less reputable doctors have uses for the recently deceased. And Masson is more than happy to oblige for a buck or two, which is his mistake number two.
Yes. He's a grave robber. One detail I liked about this, gold teeth are good to grab along with some jewelry, fine, but he doesn't steal any clothes. It says, for usually the undertaker provides a plain broadcloth suit that is cheap and easily recognizable. So, you know, if you were wearing that suit, people would know that you stole it from a dead body. Which right away I thought, what if you came to Salem and you didn't have a lot of money and you got one of those suits? You didn't know any better.
Uh-huh.
People would just assume you're a grave robber. That sucks. Why does everybody keep shunning me? I dressed up.
So Masson didn't really care what happened to the bodies after he took what he needed. But there were times that he would dig up a grave and a whole corpse would be gone, with only a large hole remaining. And these gnawed holes would always be at the end and never at the top or the sides, which was kind of worrying to him.
It says, it was almost as though the rats were working under the direction of some impossibly intelligent leader. Which was funny to me because removing a body through a hole doesn't seem impossibly intelligent to me.
Yeah, not at all.
It definitely suggests a kind of intelligence, but
sure.
Impossibly intelligent makes me think of like a beautiful mind or something. This is not that.
Rats wouldn't come in through the top, especially if they're already underground. They would come in through the sides.
Sure.
Of the head. So I don't really see too much reason.
And rats are pretty smart as far as finding food goes.
Yeah.
Nothing impossible about it, I say.
With our backstory laid out, now we have Masson standing in an open grave on a wooden casket in the rain at night. This casket was buried a few days ago, and he has an idea of what kind of loot is buried inside.
He's had to wait until this rainy night to rob it, though, because the dead person has had a lot of visitors.
So he takes out his flashlight, and he feels scratching and scrabbling under his feet. Rats are inside of the coffin. He quickly gets his shovel into the fastens on the sides of the coffin and he breaks them open. He throws open the lid, but it's empty. But not completely, as he sees movement going out of the head of the coffin as a body is whisked away through a large gnawed hole. He just makes out a black shoe sliding out of view and he can hear sharp squealing. It's the rats. They've got the whole body. So he shines his light in the hole and he can see that it is a very large burrow. Now, normally, Masson would just let the rats have it, but this body has got some bling. It says, an especially fine set of cufflinks, he observed, as well as a stick pin that was undoubtedly a genuine pearl. He can't let the rats have this one. Mistake number three. Masson also has a revolver in his pocket, so he's feeling very cocky.
Oh, you sly son of a bitch.
Mm.
You know, that joke is good because you can cock a gun, but also, if you're a man with your hand in your pocket, you're always going to feel a little cocky. I know this is a weird tale story, so everybody's always carrying around a revolver, but how is this a good defense against rats?
That's a terrible defense against rats.
One at a time you can shoot. Other than that, it's just the loud noise might startle them, but
right.
Right. There's more danger. You're going to shoot yourself or somebody else. I honestly would rather have a can of hairspray than a revolver if I had to fight rats.
You want to look good. You want the hair big.
No, it's to blind them with, not just for...
I see.
But okay, that's true. I could do pretty sweet hairdo while I'm...
If you're going to fight rats, you want to look good, man.
I hadn't thought about that, Chris. I used your proper name. That was such a good idea.
So Masson goes crawling into this narrow tunnel. The place smells of dead things, and even this guy is getting the creeps. He thinks if he can't get the body quickly, he's going to turn back.
So this is classic monster in the house. The house is the tunnels, the monster is the rats, and then whatever else we're going to discover down here. And then with these stories, there's always some type of sin the characters are being punished for. The most common being greed, and that's obviously what's going on here. But I think more than the greed, it's like pure stupidity this guy needs to be punished for.
Right.
Because why would anybody crawl into this hole?
As he's crawling, he feels something drop on his legs. Turning the flashlight behind him, he sees large clumps of dirt. The burrow isn't the most stable.
Yeah, strangely, the rats didn't reinforce it with wood or steel or anything like that.
So even though he's almost on the corpse, he realizes that he needs to get out. But then he starts to move and he realizes that the tunnel is not big enough for him to turn around.
Yeah, it's too narrow. So, you know, I figured he'd just wriggle out backwards.
Yeah, me too.
But the fact that he thought he'd be able to turn around means the guy doesn't even understand basic shapes. This is a dude that even like in his 30s is still trying to put the triangle in the square hole. You know, I mean, how does he not understand this?
So he begins to panic, but then he remembers he passed a side tunnel. So he plans to scoot back and then turn around.
Yeah, he does a little turnabout. I guess he kind of backs into the side tunnel and then is able to face back where he came in. So he turns his direction around, starts crawling back towards where he came in.
So as he's scooting around, his knees are getting banged up on this rocky ground, and he feels a sharp pain in his leg, a rat bite. Uh-oh. So he kicks, and then he hears a bunch of squeals, and the rats, they all scurry around. Looking back, he can see a dozen of these huge rats just waiting for him. And there is something even bigger than that behind the rats, moving to the side.
He shuddered at the unbelievable size of the thing.
So the rats slowly move towards him, and he pulls out the revolver, but he's in a kind of awkward position.
Yeah, he's going to fire back behind his legs, so there's like a 50% chance he's just going to shoot himself. Shooting himself in the foot is both literally and figuratively what this guy is doing in this story.
So he fires the gun with a deafening bang. The tunnel fills with smoke, and he can't make anything out. His hearing slowly returns, and the smoke clears, and he can see that he's scared off the rats. So he quickly makes his way down the tunnel, but as he moves, they're on him again.
He'd have sprayed him with a little Aquanet. It would have been a different story.
Yep.
He would have looked good, too. They swarm over his legs, biting and squealing insanely at this point.
He screams. He fires the gun again, not aiming. Luckily, not blowing off his foot. The rats retreat again, but not far. He looks behind him, and he sees a huge gray rat just sitting there, staring at him. He barks, and the rat runs off.
He crawled on, pausing briefly, the black gap of a side tunnel at his elbow, as he made out a shapeless huddle on the damp clay a few yards ahead. For a second, he thought it was a mass of earth that had been dislodged from the roof, and then he recognized it as a human body. It was a brown and shriveled mummy. And with a dreadful, unbelieving shock, Masson realized that it was moving. It was crawling towards him. And in the pale glow of the flashlight, the man saw a frightful gargoyle face thrust into his own. It was the passionless, death's head skull of a long-dead corpse, instinct with hellish fire. And the glazed eyes, swollen and bulbous, betrayed the thing's blindness. It made a faint groaning sound as it crawled toward Masson, stretching its ragged and granulated lips in a grin of dreadful hunger. And Masson was frozen with abysmal fear and loathing.
Oh, monster.
Yes.
Dude, this story is pretty creepy.
Yeah, this was cool because I don't know what this thing is. I was expecting some kind of intelligent ghoul creature like the townspeople had hinted at, but this is a blind, grunting cadaver. More, it's like it's like a force of hunger, just a corpse that's displaying rat behavior, but it's also blind. And it's a scenario he shouldn't be in, and I'm kind of mad at Masson about that, but it's still very effectively scary when this happens.
Yeah. So just as the thing is going to touch him, Masson flings himself into a side burrow and turns around, freaking out and scrambling and just going crazy. I can't blame him.
Yeah, except he'd probably be better off just duking it out with the corpse that's coming towards him than heading off through another tunnel that branches off from this.
Yeah.
Just, he doesn't know where that goes.
He's freaking out.
That's true.
You know, he's kind of going a little nuts.
He did just see a zombie.
a zombie monster. Yeah, that's terrible. And he's down with rats that are trying to eat him. So it's like, it's all around a bad situation. So
that's true.
Making some bad decisions is probably understandable.
If you want to read the story and not question the behavior of the main character, you probably should do it surrounded by rats and a zombie. Then you can really get into the experience and understand his motivation. And I didn't do that. Shame on me.
If that were an option, I would have gladly turned it down. So he's hauling ass down the side tunnel, but he's messing up his hands and his knees on the rocks as he does so. The rats, they attack him again, but fortunately he succeeds on beating them off.
Now that's what it says in the story. Those are Kuttner's words, not yours.
They're not my words.
He's beating these rats off, and that made me think maybe this is the frightful orgy. That was referenced.
So the passage gets smaller and he's having to get down lower to get through it. And he sees that he's under this huge stone and he gets an idea. If he can dislodge the stone, it would cave in the tunnel behind him and he can get free. The ground seems soft enough from the rain and, you know, at this point he's got nothing to lose. He's got rats and zombies coming right after him.
Yeah, right. I mean, why not try it? And, you know, since he's got nothing to lose, maybe it's a good time to finally take a crack at that short film he's been thinking about, you know? There's nothing to lose, guy. Go for it, Masson.
That big gray rat he saw before shows up, and behind him, the ghoulish thing. Finally, he uses his strength and collapses the tunnel. So do you think that that big rat was somehow being controlled by the zombie? Or, how about this, the big rat was controlling the zombie?
I think that's probably the case, yeah.
Because it seemed intelligent.
Yeah, the big rat seems very kind of standoffish. He's just sort of watching everything. Probably strategizing. Yeah.
So that's kind of a cool idea that there's this weird rat creature thing. Maybe it's like a Brown Jenkins sort of dude.
Sure. Well, I think it's cool, you know, if the people naturally assumed that it was the underground denizens who are commanding the rats, but that's because they're humans and they think that way.
Right, yeah.
It's likely the other way around.
So he can hear a shriek of agony as it all comes down, and it's not just the stone, it's the whole tunnel is beginning to collapse. Mm-hmm. He starts freaking out. He feels the earth falling on his legs, but he moves quick and he gets to a coffin, and as he pulls himself inside, he feels that the lid is closed and unopenable.
Right, he feels that against his back because he's still, you know, facing down, climbing through here. At first, he doesn't even realize he's in a coffin because it's dark in there. He's just in the tunnel, but his head crashes into the other side of it. And that's when he realizes what's up. He's gone through one of those impossibly intelligent holes that the rats make in the sides of these things.
So now he's trapped. This coffin is still buried under 5 feet of hard-packed earth. He tries to turn around, but there isn't enough room because he was hoping that maybe he can claw his way through the cave-in that he just created. But if he can't turn around, he can't dig with his hands.
No, it's so tight he can't even flip over to look up. It says he braced himself and strained at the coffin lid. So he's doing it with his back, but it's immovable.
He found himself gasping. It was dreadfully fetid, unbearably hot. In a paroxysm of terror, he ripped and clawed at the satin until it was shredded. He made a futile attempt to dig with his feet at the earth from the collapsed burrow that blocked his retreat. If he were only able to reverse his position, he might be able to claw his way through to the air. Air! White, hot agony lanced through his breast, throbbing in his eyeballs. And suddenly, he heard the exultant squealing of the rats. He began to scream insanely, but could not drown them out. For a moment, he thrashed about hysterically within his narrow prison, and then he was quiet, gasping for air. His eyelids closed, his blackened tongue protruded, and he sank down into the blackness of death with the mad squealing of the rats dinning in his ears.
That is the end of the story, and that is some ghastly shit.
Pretty terrifying. The writing is really cool in here, and the claustrophobia and the rats and everything.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's definitely not some new fears. I guess you could call this fears we've discussed in the last couple of months because you've got those rats, but also you've got this horrifying experience of being buried alive.
It's a combination of two fears. So that's new.
It is new. That's right. You know, when you combine two things, it can become a new fear. I'm specifically afraid of chasing a corpse and then getting attacked by rats and being buried alive. This is a really cool, I wouldn't even call this a story necessarily. It's an episode. It's an effect.
Yeah.
And the writing is fun. It's clear. We don't have to care much about the bad guy because he's such an idiot. It's a good time while you're reading it, even though it's got some terrifying imagery in there. And it's a popular story. I mean, from what I could tell, it's been reprinted at least 35 times.
Oh, wow.
Lately, it was published in Zombies from the Pulps, which is a book edited by Jeffrey Shanks, who's a friend of the show. He's been on with us before.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
He's a Robert E. Howard expert. And it's been adapted for comic books numerous times, as you can imagine. It would fit perfectly in one of these
sure.
Tales from the Crypt type books. But it's also been made for film. It was in the Dan Curtis made for cable anthology film Trilogy of Terror 2.
Oh, right. Yeah, that first one scared the crap out of me.
Yeah, if you're interested in checking that out, tell us about it, because I don't think I'm going to watch that movie. But, you know, if you guys watch it and you like it.
You know what I'm interested in?
What are you interested in?
Thanking some of our generous patrons.
I am, too. Let me lay it on you. I want to thank Lucas Kresser.
Ehud Yaniv.
I want to thank David Cooper.
I would like to thank Tanner Hudson.
Sam Monk, you are the bee's knees.
Oh, my God, France Lee! She's my friend. She was over. We just played Cthulhu Wars together.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't know she subscribed to the show. Yes.
Kevin Fayard. Thank you so much.
Yaroslav Lichtblau.
Melanie Beasley.
And Jeffrey Fletchell.
Thank you, everybody, for being part of the team. I definitely want to thank Anthony Tedesco for doing a beautiful job reading, as always.
He's so good at pretty much everything he does. He's a great guy, and I love him dearly. Next week, we're going to be doing Beyond the Door by J. Paul Sutter.
I've heard good things about that, and I know Lovecraft was a big fan of that story, so can't wait to read it. That's all we have for this week. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast
at hppodcraft.com.